NFL Legend Show on the Grueling Truth Sports Network. As always, the Grueling Truth is brought to you by Betting.net. Betting.net is your best bet for finding the online casino or sports book that's right for you. Make sure you check them out. I'm your host for the Legend Show, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, we're going to have on a man who is one of the greatest linebackers in NFL history. He was on the all-decade team for the 1990s with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Help me welcome to the show, LeVon Kirkland. How you doing, LeVon?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, sir?
I am great. I'm still trying to figure out how guys can be all decade for an entire decade not be in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Well, I don't really know. That's a mystery to probably a lot of people that you're all decade in whatever decade that is, and you're not in the Hall of Fame. But you know, it's something that I really don't worry about because I can't control. So I feel like if I can't control it, I can't worry about it. I have to just move on. So that's what I do. I move on.
Yeah, and if you look at guys like Robert Brazil, who should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, it took him 30 years to get in.
Yeah, you know, it really kind of all depends. You know, it all depends on how they look at you, you know, how the voters address you. So it's difficult. I mean, for some guys, it's easy to get in. You know, they have the career. Some guys, it takes a little longer.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about your story is how you started out. You didn't come from a big football factory school. From what I read, you played at South Carolina's lowest level, Class A, in a town of less than 1,000 people, which makes what you did even that much more remarkable.
Yeah, you know, it was a town that, you know, just a small town and very humble people, not a lot going on. But we really did have a good program. We really did have a good coach that really helped direct me in my path of going to Clemson University and getting it all started in that way. I was just a kid who was determined to get out of my small town and do what I loved doing, and that was playing football. So I made up in my mind that was what I was going to do, and I got encouraged along the way. But yeah, it was from the outside looking in, you probably would have never guessed it. But it's so funny now that we've had like at least 5 guys that played in the NFL from my small town that's less than 1,000 people. And we're going to have another guy go in this year, Kobe Durant, that plays at South Carolina State. He will probably have an opportunity to play in the NFL. So it's 6 guys from this 1A school. Kind of remarkable.
Yeah, that's amazing. That doesn't happen too many, because a lot of times small school guys, coaches look at them and think, well, they're not playing the best competition, so we really don't know if they're that good or not.
Yeah, a lot of times they do think that way, but I really believe that in a lot of ways those guys have more of a ceiling, you know, because if they don't have the great program, they don't have the great strength and conditioning, you may look at them as a 2-star, but you got to really look at the athlete and how you think he can develop. And for me at Clemson, that was the case. They saw me as a really good athlete, an athlete that can gain weight, get stronger, understand the game a little bit better, and you may have something. So, you know, I was really just very raw coming out of high school. And I really, when I got to Clemson, I really flourished athletically, but then the next step was to really understand the game of football, and that's where Gene Chizik came in, and he really helped me understand what we were doing on defense, and it just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, and when you get to Clemson, how big of an adjustment is it to go to Clemson, which is one of the top programs in the country in the 80s? It won a national championship in 1982 under Danny Ford. All of a sudden, you're playing there. Was it kind of a culture shock to go from a small town to a big college?
It was a sort of a culture shock, but Clemson had the environment that I really liked. It wasn't too big. It wasn't in the midst of a city, so it was all campus. So that was really great for me. Great football program that I was willing to learn. I was willing to grow. It didn't really, you know, it didn't hurt my feelings that I got redshirted or anything like that. So it was a little bit of an adjustment. It really was. But, you know, you grow into things, and I grew into it. And this is what I knew. I knew that I might have been looked at as an underdog, But in my family, we were not, we didn't treat ourselves as underdogs. We knew if we got the work done.
Hey, at least it's the Rocky music. You can tell I'm old. That's what I always tell everybody. Anytime you see somebody over the age of 50 working out at the gym, they're probably listening to the Rocky soundtrack.
It's some kind of montage from Rocky.
Yeah, you got. I mean, the Rocky music was great for lifting weights, LeVon.
Oh, it's still great for lifting weights. I used to do it all the time, and especially when I was doing the boxing training, that was Rocky was the thing I listened to. So I understand. But no, I going back to your question, it was an adjustment, but I didn't feel like I was like an underdog or anything like that. I felt like God gave me the ability to play football. It didn't matter where I came from. If I can play the game, I can play the game. And that's kind of my mindset. I just had a really good mindset at that point in time.
Yeah, and the best story I remember reading about you getting ready for this was when you're at Clemson in your first or second, and you're wanting Danny Ford to recognize you. You made three great plays in a row, right, and you're waiting for him to say your name, and he called you Laverne.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, my brother is named Laverne, and my father's named Laverne. So, yeah, you know, for me, it was a big deal for Danny Ford to even recognize me. And I remember, you know, we were doing like kind of like not an Oklahoma drill, but it's like 3-on-3 defense versus the offense. And you got to kind of stop them from gaining yards or gaining a touchdown. And it was outside backers versus the tight ends. And I'm going against this tight end who's a sophomore. Well, he's a sophomore. I'm a redshirt freshman. And, you know, the first play, I hit him, get him off me, make the tackle. And the same thing the next two plays. And Danny Ford used to kind of highlight what we, you know, what practice was like, or he would highlight players that are doing well. And so it comes my turn, man, and he's like, if you ever want to see anybody do 3-on-3, look at this Laverne Kirkland. And the coaching staff and everybody just started laughing. But not that only, I was like, well, coach, my name's LeVon. He's like, I know your damn name, but he didn't know my name. But I was like, hey, if you want to call me Laverne, you can call me Laverne. But it was a glorious day for me because Danny Ford recognized who I was. And again, I wasn't a very highly recruited player.
Yeah, and when you were at Clemson, you guys had some great guys that played defensive tackle. Right. A lot of guys drafted. John Johnson, who I think was a third-round pick by the 49ers in 91. Chester McLaughlin, who was a first-round pick by the Raiders in 92, Ed McDaniel, Wayne Simmons, Ashley Shepard, which were all guys that were drafted. So that was a loaded defensive line room the entire time you were there.
Yeah, it was. We really had a great defense at one point in time. I think it was 1990. We were the number one defense in the country. So, and then we had guys like Vance Hammond, who got drafted, I think, with the St. Louis Cardinals at the time. We had guys like Dexter Davis, who also got drafted, Jerome Henderson, who got drafted in the back end of it. So we were really stacked as far as defense is concerned, and it was tough making plays on that defense. It was. I mean, because everybody was making plays, so you almost had to fight to get tackles. So it was a great experience because you're playing with guys who are really good as well. And the competition, especially at the outside linebacker room, which I was in, you know, you had to really push your game because Wayne Simmons went first round to the Green Bay Packers and he played behind me. a guy who was behind me was a first rounder. So that room was stacked, and so you had to really, you know, at that time, you had to stand up to competition.
Yeah, 1992, you're drafted in the second round by the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you're a linebacker, I mean, considering your age, you saw guys like Jack Ham, Jack Lambert. Mm-hmm. It had to be exciting to be a Pittsburgh Steeler.
It really was. I mean, you were following behind a legacy of linebackers that got the job done, won a lot of Super Bowls. And I wanted to be a part of that legacy. I wanted to be in that number, as they say in church. And You know, the first year I got, first year I really didn't play a whole lot. Basically a lot of special team stuff. But I also never played inside linebacker or middle linebacker either. So it was an adjustment period for me. And luckily for me, they allow you to grow into your position. So it wasn't so much pressure to play right away. You know, it was about, okay, let's let them grow into that position, take some time. And I that's how I kind of developed. You know, I was able to kind of sit back and watch Hardy Nickerson, David Little, and those guys, Greg Lloyd, and those guys be professionals and play the game and practice. And, you know, it was good for me to see that and not have to be thrown in the fire right away. So it was a great experience for me.
Yeah, and Nick on Facebook says you were one of his favorite players growing up. Loved watching you and Greg Lloyd play. Nick, thanks for the comment. Bill Cowher came in 1992 also. He's just young. He's energetic. He's a yeller. He was a linebacker. So you guys kind of came in together. What was your experience like with him? Did you guys kind of bond a little bit just because you were both kind of rookies at what you were doing?
Well, I mean, he was a rookie head coach, but he's been in the NFL for a while as a player.
Yeah, I think he was the Bills special teams coach and linebackers coach before that.
I think he was Kansas City linebacker coach, then became the defensive coordinator. So Bill has been there for a while. I was thrilled. I wanted to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I wasn't even a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, but I met Bill Cowher as we were doing the combines and the pro days. And I just wanted to be with the Steelers, man. I had a meeting with him. He was a young guy. He was energetic. I'm just fresh from college. So I wanted to play for him. I really did. And it happened. And he was one of my favorite coaches. We had a really good relationship. We joked a little bit. I read his book, and it was one of the funny things was he was saying that a guy like me, you really never had to get on because I was pretty tough on myself. So we had a good relationship. We really did. I enjoyed playing for him. I think that the players enjoyed playing for him as well. And he really got us off to a good start. You know, first 6 years, we're in the playoffs every year.
First year right away, playoffs. Yeah. I think you guys were the one seed, but you ran into the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. And then 93, you take over for David Little. That gets us to 94. You lose the championship game to the Chargers, which I don't think anybody expected that to happen.
No.
And then in 95, you play, you beat the Colts, you go to the Super Bowl. And still to this day, I think one of the five best linebacker performances anybody's ever seen in a Super Bowl was you leading that defense, holding Emmitt Smith to like 56 yards. I think the first play of the game, I think you got blocked. You gave up like a 20-yard play.
And yeah, then, I went the wrong way.
And then nothing happened again the rest of that day. Your defense completely shut down that Dallas Cowboy great offensive line and running game.
Yeah, you know, that – when you've never experienced anything about the Super Bowl, you're kind of nervous, to be honest with you. I don't care how much football you play, but when you play on that big stage, it's a little nerve-wracking, you know? So the first series, we were not settled at all. We were just, you know, you're so excited. You have to calm down. And we calmed down probably around after the second series. We calmed down, they're up 10-0, and we're like, wait a second, we're not punks. We're not going to just get blown out of this thing. We know how to play. Let's play our game. And once for me, I got that first tackle on Emmitt, it was on, because that whole week or two, everybody was questioning whether we can stop him, stop that running game. And we did. We just really took it to him. And it's a game I really felt that we should have won. Basically, if you take away two turnovers, we're going to win that game. So, yeah, it was a fantastic game for me. But, you know, as a kid, as a young adult, I played that game in my mind 1,000 times. You know, I played in the Super Bowl. So it was just basically getting over some nerves. And once that happened, I started trusting what I saw. And it really helped my career. And Matt Millen he was one of the broadcasters, or he was a reporter at the time. And he got word to me that he thought that I was one of the dark horses on the team. And he said, like, LeVon, you're seeing the right things. You're just not trusting it.
You got to trust your eyes. That was my aha moment. And once he gave me that, I was like, okay, trust your eyes. This, everything you see is right today. And everything I saw, except for that first run play, it was right. It was right, and I ended up playing a very good game.
Yeah, and in 1996, season got off to a bad start because you lost. You lost your emotional leader, Greg Lloyd. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, that was probably, to me, maybe your best season, because you stepped up, became the leader on the team, and got your first All-Pro nomination and first Pro Bowl.
Yeah, you know, that was a, you know, that summer, and, you know, I really just kind of dedicated myself to being better as a player. And after that Super Bowl, I felt like, okay, I'm ready to step in. And I wanted to be a all, you know, three down kind of guy. But Greg was ahead of me as far as that was concerned. I felt like I could cover. And I felt like I would be really good in the third down package. But just, you know, Greg was there. Just really never got a chance to do that. So I was really good in my role that I was doing. And when Greg gets hurt, you know, I'm in there. And I'm like, okay, you know, he's going to be out for the year. It's time for me to take over as a leader. And I learned this from Damani Dawson, man, that leading is action. It's not talking. It's about action. You know, players are not going to follow you if you do all the rah-rah stuff, but you don't produce. So I wasn't a very vocal leader, but because of my position, because I called the signals, it's pretty much a leadership position. And I just went out there and played. I just let it loose. I was just really confident in what I could do. And, you know, I started getting some interceptions, and people are just like, wow.
Yeah, I think 96 you had 4 interceptions, which is a lot for an inside linebacker.
Yeah, really, if you count the playoffs, I had 5 interceptions. So, and probably could have had maybe 6, you know, I probably could have had 6. I probably should have had 6 or 7. But, yeah, that was the thing that people started noticing, a guy of my stature being able to go back there and make plays. You know, not just to drop into a spot, but actually to catch the ball, make plays. So I think once I saw, you know, when I started doing that, you know, people saw me at another level. Because, you know, people always thought I could cover the run and do a very good job against the run, bring heat on the quarterback. But honestly, one of my favorite things was to do was to be a cover guy. I like covering. I love 7-on-7. I really did. So that was my chance to showcase that I can cover, and I can cover well.
Yeah, and in 1997, you followed that up with another, I think it was your career high, 126 tackles. Mm-hmm. The Broncos beat you guys in the playoffs with John Elway. That had to be rough. But then 98 through 2000, the Steelers struggled on offense. Defense was still good, but failed to make the playoffs those years, which is very rare for the Steelers to miss the playoffs that many times in a row. And then we get to 2001, which was a weird season. You know, the Steelers waived you, and that was the year guys like John Randall, Troy Aikman, Jerry Rice, yourself were all waived because of salary cap issues. Right. And you end up having to go to Seattle. What kind of a shock was that for you? Did you see it coming that they were going to let you go?
No, I really didn't see it coming, because the year before, I had a really good season. I was hurt at first. I still played through it, but I ended up probably having a great season. I was in really good shape that year. And although we didn't get to the playoffs, man, you know, you could tell that we were getting better. You know, finally our offense had a little bit of a rhythm. Cordell was playing a lot better. And, you know, that last game, I told everybody before, I said, get ready, because next year we're going to make a run. I mean, I told the whole team that, because I knew we were going to make a run. And then, you know, you get the call, and you're like, wow, I didn't really see that coming. The only disappointing thing for me was I felt that I deserved a little bit more respect as far as calling me and letting me know what was going on and what were your ideas. And, you know, they didn't do that until later on in the process, you know, they told me it wasn't about my play. It was more of a salary cap thing. And I was upset for maybe 2 days. And then I got over it. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to go back to work, you know, and somebody is going to value me and going to see me as a player that I am. And that's when Seattle stepped up, and they needed a guy who was a leader, a guy who, being through it, knew how to win, to come to theirs, to their organization. And that was good for me. I was glad that I did it, because it gave me an opportunity to kind of get away, and gave me an opportunity to be with some other guys and to be respected right off the bat. So yeah, that was good for me. I mean, I appreciate it. Coach Holcomb really believed in me. And it was, I mean, it's a little different because I never played in a 4-3, so I had to get used to that. But other than that, man, it was a good experience for me.
Yeah, I mean, that was a team in 2000, I think, with 6-10. And by when you were there, I think they were 9-7, weren't they?
And we probably should have won. You know, we were good. We were more of an average team because we didn't quite know how to win just yet. And a lot of times we were, guys were, you know, that team was a little bit more nervous, you know, than most teams. You know, it was like, it was, the games was more like a chore for them. I mean, I can remember the locker room, the first game, and everybody was quiet. I mean, it was like deadly silent. And when I was at Pittsburgh, man, we were loose, you know, and I was just like, listen, we already did the work, man. There's no reason for us to be like high school seniors or high school team where you're just real quiet, nobody's saying anything because everybody's nervous. And I was like, we put in the work, man. If you put in the work through the week, man, the game is going to take care of itself. And I really felt that way. And we did a, you know, we played well enough, but we could have probably won some other games, but we weren't quite there yet. But it was a good experience for me.
Yeah, the game that sticks out for me for you guys was the Giants game at Giants Stadium. You lost 27-24 because you won the two games after that. If you'd have won that Giants game, you guys would have been a playoff team.
Yeah, but and that's what I mean by sometimes when you're an average team and you're not used to winning and you go on the road, guys don't know how to put it together. When I was with Pittsburgh, man, we were road warriors. We understood that it didn't matter where we were playing, that we're going to get it done. And a lot of times when you're talking about sports, it's about confidence. It's about understanding that you're going to get it done no matter where you're at. It can be a parking lot, my backyard, it doesn't matter. We're going to get it done. And we weren't quite there yet. Everybody didn't really believe that. And, you know, as a player, you have to take ownership. You know, you can be coached all day, but you got to take ownership.
Yeah, I would think the difference between Pittsburgh and Seattle would be in Pittsburgh, you knew you were going to win. In Seattle, you hoped you were going to win.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times that's usually teams. You know, teams that are not familiar with winning on a consistent basis, they go into the game hoping they're going to win, and normally one or two things happen. If everything starts off well for that team, they're probably going to play well, and they're probably going to end up winning the game. But if it starts off bad, you know, if it's a battle, if it's a struggle, you feel like, well, here we go again. Here we go again. We're in this situation. We can't get it done. But teams who know how to win understand no matter if they're down 14-0, that they're going to be able to come back. Yeah. And we weren't quite there with Seattle, but it was a good team. We had some good players now. We really did. I mean, it made me realize that every team in the NFL got good players.
Wasn't John Randall on that defensive line?
John Randall was on that team. Chad Easton was on that team.
Chad Brown.
We had Chad Brown. We had Anthony Simmons, who was really probably one of the best linebackers. I mean, he was a linebacker that had everything. He could do it all. We had Willie Williams. We had Sean Springs. We had some guys. We really did. And our defense wasn't bad at all. You know, Matt Hasselbeck was on that team. Sean Alexander. Ricky Waters got hurt, but Ricky was on that team. We had some really good young receivers. We wasn't quite there. That was it. I think if Trent Dilfer would have played probably more, we probably would have went to the playoffs.
Yeah, Dilfer is an underrated quarterback. He gets a lot of crap.
He's a great leader, and guys do follow him. Guys do like him, so.
All right, so we've got Steve Ramsey. This is a guy here that had just got surgery done this morning on his rotator cuff, and he's already sending messages here. Steve's a Bengals fan, though.
Well, I'm sure the Bengals are pretty happy about what happened this year.
Actually, I'm a Bengals fan. It's the third time I've seen that happen. I know. I didn't know if you remembered from 6 or 7 years ago when I interviewed you or not. You gave me a lot of crap back then.
I did. Is there some crap you want to give back to me now?
No, I'm good. We still haven't won a Super Bowl, and you guys have won, what, 5 or 6 or something?
We won 6. You know how many Super Bowls we've won.
No, I really didn't. Because you all finally got the one for the thumb, though. So that was good. That took like 30 years.
Finally, yeah. We could have had 7 or maybe even 8. You know, we lost 2 of them as well.
We could have had 3, but that damn Joe Montana on those first 2.
Stephen Jennings, I still remember that kickoff return. And
92 yards.
And like, oh, man, the Bengals are going to win this one. And Joe Montana just drove it down.
I remember being excited like that, too. Jim Breach kicks the field goal. The Bengals go up 16-13. I'm all excited. My dad looked at me and said, there's 3 minutes left, and they got Joe Montana, son. We're going to lose.
Thanks, Dad, for being so optimistic.
But he was right. So, and it always happened with Joe Montana.
He was right. But, you know, if you think about it, the quarterback is, you know, that's the trigger guy. That's the guy that gets the ball 100% of the time on your offense. And if you got a good one, man, you got a chance. And that's what you guys got now. You got Joe Burrow, and you did really – your receivers are really good. I told everybody before T. Higgins got drafted, I'm like, T. Higgins is going to be a steal for anybody who gets him. He's a first-round talent that may go in the second round, but whoever gets this guy, he's going to be a steal.
And he's really underrated because Jamar Chase is basically the home run hitter.
Very underrated receiver. But I tell you what, anything that's within his range, he's going to catch it.
Yeah.
He's going to catch it.
So do you still watch the NFL a lot?
I watch the red zone. I don't really sit and watch one game.
I watch the red zone, too. I mean, that's the best part. You get to see everything that matters.
I think the red zone is the best thing that ever happened. I wish they would do it in college. But, yeah, I will watch the red zone. More so this year, I really got into watching the red zone. And I don't really normally, unless it's a late game or a Monday night game, I don't just watch one game on Sunday. I love watching the highlights. And you get to keep in touch, and you get to see other players.
Well, you don't have to watch all the damn commercials either, Lamar.
You don't have to watch all the commercials, and you don't have to watch, you know, every boring play that happens in an NFL game.
All right. Steve says that he loves us. And he loves the grilling truth. So, all right. Hey, this is the thing. For some reason, I'm a huge Bengal fan. And outside of the Bengals, probably the most players I've ever interviewed for teams were Steelers. And the sad thing, LaVon, is every time I do, I come away liking them, which really bothers me.
Well, you know what? You know what you're realizing? You got a perspective that most fans don't have, where you get to meet other players and you get to talk to them, and you realize that those guys are actually human beings.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not the hated enemy. You know, we're all out there just trying to get a job done, doing something that we love doing. But I can understand from a fan perspective, you don't like that guy. You may respect him as a player, but you don't really like him. But you get a chance to talk to guys like us, and, you know, you're probably surprised that we're a human being.
Well, see, the thing I realized a long time ago was this. I hate the Pittsburgh Steelers because we couldn't beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody hates the Detroit Lions.
Right.
You know, nobody hated the Cincinnati Bengals. They will now, probably, especially if they're successful next year, because everybody's darling that wins, everybody always turns out to hate. It was like the Duke Blue Devils in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. Everybody cheered for Duke because they'd never won a championship. Yeah. And then once you get into the early 2000s, everybody hates Duke because they can't beat them.
Well, you know, Clemson kind of felt that way, too. You know, everybody kind of, okay, Clemson, you know, we play against Alabama. We barely beat those guys. Well, we barely lose those guys, and then we win. And then we win another one, and now people are like, I hate Clemson. Dabble is too much of a cheerleader. I mean, you hear all the stories.
Well, everybody likes the underdog.
Yeah, everybody likes the underdog, and then when they become on top of their game, everybody doesn't like them.
Yeah, until they get to the end, and it's their last game, like Krzyzewski, now everybody's going to cheer for him. Right. Emerson Martin says, LaVon, how you doing? My teammate, 95-99.
That's right. What's up, Emerson? What's going on?
See, yeah. little bit of everybody listens here. But, all right, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. But go ahead and tell us, what are you doing today?
Well, you know, I am with the South Carolina Football Hall of Fame. And our motto is educate, empower, and encourage our student athletes. In South Carolina, as far as college and career readiness, we rank in the bottom 10. And we feel like this is an issue, not only for our students, but also for the community and for the state. And we feel like through the game of football, we can make that better. So I do a couple podcasts. One is called The Inside Blitz with LaVon Kirkland, and it's a sports and leadership podcast. And we talk to different athletes that come from South Carolina, different coaches, different ADs. And also we talk to our young high school players. And we try to, we really try to reward those guys. And we do what we call a Bridge Builders Excellence Award. And we give it to what we consider the top student athlete as far as football goes. Also, I'm going back to school with trying to get my master's degree in psychology. I am attempting to write a book that the first book is almost finished. So that's pretty exciting. So it basically talks about me coming up from a small town from 11 years old, believing that I could play in the NFL, to me going to Clemson. And then the next two series is going to be my years at Clemson. And then hopefully we end up with my years with the in the NFL.
All right, real quick, where can people find your podcast?
We're on Apple, we're on YouTube, we're on Spotify, so we're all over the place. But the one that I do with is called Clemson Football with LaVon Kirkland. We're on the Believe Network, BLEAV, and that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun.
I know that network. I was a guest on a couple of those shows for.
Yeah. I'm doing a great deal, man. I'm also trying to plan a summit for student athletes middle school student athletes. And we're going to try to teach them some life skills. You know, we do so many football camps and we teach them to run, hoops, but do we do enough as far as teaching them life skills? I know football and sports give you life skills, but we want to make sure those guys are aware of it. It's something that we're going to do free for those students, but I think it's going to give them a well-rounded, holistic experience. And hopefully what we're doing is we're making better people.
Well, that is the key. A great coach makes better people. He doesn't necessarily make great football players.
Right. That's indeed right, sir.
All right. LaVon, as always, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I can tell you this. I do Survive in Advance with Steve Risley. He was a part of the 1981 Indiana Hoosiers National Championship team. And every time I do a Legends show, I have to promise him that whatever guest I have in a Legends show will have on Survive in Advance. So maybe in a couple months you want to come back on so Steve doesn't get mad at me. He always feels left out. But I tell him, you're a basketball legend. It doesn't fit on a football show.
Right, right, right. But hey, anytime you want me on, I'm available to you. So.
All right, LaVon, I appreciate it. And right now, I want to tell everybody to head over now and see for yourself. Betting.net makes it easy to find all the legal online casinos or sports books in your state. Check them out. Click on the FanDuel link in the bottom of this video to take you there for great deals. But for now, I want to thank everybody for listening in. Our NFL show will be tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern. We got a lot to talk about with all the free agent movements. So make sure you check us out there. Make sure you follow us at Grueling Truth, and you can hear us wherever you find sports podcasts. But for now, for LaVon Kirkland, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth.